I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. The amount of vacant office space is going down, down, down. In fact, downtown Kansas City leads the nation in reducing the rate of empty offices, and it's not because of new businesses. This hour, we examine what's behind that drop and what that means for renters looking for office and living space in downtown KC. First, though, the proposal to extend Kansas City streetcar line south to the plaza is being put before only a select number of voters. Today, we'll discuss why only certain people are eligible for a ballot. Later, Brian McTavish and the Weekend To-Do List. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. It's been a little over a year since the streetcar opened in downtown Kansas City, and already voting is underway to expand it. The catch? Only certain Kansas Citians are eligible to vote in the election. They have to apply to receive a ballot, and the deadline to register is Tuesday. Here to talk about the voting process is David Johnson. He's chairman of the Kansas City Regional Transit Alliance. And David, welcome. So good to have you here.
Thanks for having us, Steve.
So who will be able to vote in this thing, David?
So any registered voter that's registered at an address, basically in the boundary from the Missouri River on the north to 53rd Street on the south, State Line on the west, and Campbell Street on the east.
How can people find out if they're able to vote? Is there a map or a website that they can find?
Yeah, the map and ballot application are online. This election is administered by the Circuit Court, the 16th Circuit Court of Missouri, which is in Kansas City. And that address is 16thcircuit.org/streetcar. You can also find information on our website, kcrta.org/streetcar.
Well, why is the election restricted to the boundaries that you just outlined to us?
So a transportation development district, which is what's proposed, just like downtown, to fund this extension.
TDD.
TDD. TDD election, you're creating a new political subdivision. And so the burden is, do you reside, are you qualified to vote inside the proposed new boundary? That's the reason for the application.
Why do we do this election this way? Why not vote citywide?
So that happened in, it wasn't citywide, but there was a much larger TDD proposed by the city in 2014 to fund three extensions of the streetcar, which was not open at the time, and the Prospect Max project, which is bus rapid transit.
And that election
failed.
But
what was interesting about the voting patterns and what we have found out is very consistent across decades is that the corridor that we just talked about, River to 53rd, State Line to Campbell, says yes every time. And so there's a core of support, people who want to tax themselves to build streetcar or light rail. And so we're tapping into that using the project that happens to score the best for residential and job density and potential for federal funding from that 2014 expansion plan.
I know I'm getting way ahead of ourselves here, but assuming the streetcar would be expanded out to the plaza and UMKC, are the plans to take it even further south or east, or is anything else on the drawing boards here, or am I way too far ahead?
The 2014 expansion plan included some eastern extensions on Independence Avenue in Linwood.
Mm-hmm.
The unfortunate thing about both of those is even people, people that lived right along those extensions voted no. So that's a heavy lift to extend this funding mechanism to do additional extensions. At this point, once you build to the plaza, you've got something that's meaningful for a lot of people. This is a very dense part of the city, and a larger, more regional funding mechanism is probably something you'd have to pursue.
So this extension from downtown out to the plaza really takes this streetcar from the toy train idea into something, as you just described, as something far more significant for Kansas City.
I love the toy train comment because, if it was a toy train, you certainly would feel comfortable stepping out in front of it. I don't recommend that with a 80,000-ton streetcar. But
is that what it is, 80,000 tons?
It's very heavy. It's very
heavy.
Large.
It'll hurt if it hits you.
You don't want to play with the streetcar. So Yeah, it would make it much more meaningful to more people. You know, there's good ridership on Main Street today. The Main Street Max, which opened in 2005, has done a good job of attracting new riders. I think the question with that, it also is, you know, sort of past its useful life as far, you know, mechanically and for the built items. And so there would have to be a conversation about either updating or replacing those assets anyway. So this timing is really good. And I think what we've seen downtown with the free-to-ride model, which I hope would continue as we extend south, is that you have people not worrying about whether they've got the right fare or carrying, you know, correct change, and then just freely walking on and circulating and spending money while they're doing it.
Okay, so if this election is this vote is approved, the people who vote for it are the people who are going to be paying for it. Do I have that right?
Correct. So there's two revenue sources proposed in the district. One is a district-wide 1% sales tax. So that would apply on all retail purchases within the boundary that we discussed. The second, and it's more targeted, is a special assessment on all real property along Main Street, about a third a mile in each direction. Mm-hmm. So it's very important that people realize that if you do not live within a third of a mile of Main Street, you will not have your property assessed.
So this is sales tax and property tax.
Right. So then, it's the same approach we took downtown. The difference is that the district is a little bit larger than the assessment zone for this expansion.
And the route's longer.
It's 3.75 miles additional to the 2.2 that was already in operations.
Describe for us exactly where the streetcar line will go as it comes south, straight down Main Street, and once it hits the plaza, then where does it go?
So what you just described, that's how much is known for sure right now. It will go down Main Street and, you know, terminate in the vicinity of UMKC's main campus right here. But the exact details, which lane, exactly how it will terminate in the vicinity of UMKC, how it will serve the plaza exactly, that is part of a technical study that actually just kicked off this week. So the consultant team was announced. It'll be led by HDR, which did the downtown study and engineering. And they'll determine the lane that the streetcar tracks would be put in and, you know, where the stops will be. I think it's a safe bet that a lot of the Main Street Max stops today would also become streetcar stops. Mm-hmm. But all that will be figured out over the summer in anticipation of a putting the project in the pipeline for federal funds.
I was going to say, federal funding is always a part of this equation. What are the prospects for that?
Well, you may have heard there's a new administration and they've...
New priorities.
New priorities, and they have made people in public transportation very, very nervous. And that's regardless of what you're building, whether you're just running buses, building light rail or streetcar, or even running a subway. These capital investment grants that have been consistent for decades have been very threatened. And so everyone's kind of trying to see what happens with the president's next budget. You may be aware that there was an appropriations omnibus, which did, thankfully, Congress stepped in and said, we will actually fund these projects in the pipeline. But as beyond that, that's a big question. There is an option to do this locally. People do fund transportation projects, including transit and streetcar, with all local dollars. That's not part of what we anticipated, so we would need to find an additional source of revenue if we elect not to take federal money. But when you do that, when you defederalize, as they say, you can actually speed up the project and you have more flexibility in how it's constructed.
And so this project is going to cost how much money?
So we're anticipating $227 million is the capital expense.
And
so
how much would the federal government kick in?
Up to $100 million through the Small Starts program.
So roughly 45%, give or take a little bit.
Which is about what the federal contribution to the downtown line.
Okay. I'm visiting with David Johnson. He's chairman of the Kansas City Regional Transit Alliance about the streetcar ballot that's now going out. We were talking just a few minutes ago about the fact this will be a sales tax and a property tax. David, how much is this going to cost people who actually live in the district, and for how long will they be paying this thing?
So it's important to remember that this is a special assessment on property value versus a property tax. So that's legally defined differently, although it is calculated in a similar way and will appear on your property tax bill. But if you have a market value residence of $100,000, the annual assessment would be $133.
Okay. Why do people have to apply for a ballot here to vote in this election?
So as I mentioned earlier, we're setting up a new political subdivision with taxing authority. And the Transportation Development District Act requires you to do that if you conduct the election by mail.
Okay. Let's see if any listeners have questions here. We just have David for a few more moments. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Jason wants to know this, David. I live on the east side of Campbell and the boundary line goes straight down Campbell. Am I in the proposed district and can I vote?
So the legal description of the district is the center line of Campbell. That's typically because it becomes a little bit more complicated. So we use the center line of the street. So if you're on the east side of Campbell, you're not in the district. So
Jeron, you're off the hook.
I would encourage you to cross the street and ask your neighbors to participate in the process, though.
Okay. And again, run through us how people apply to get one of these ballots. Just make sure this is crystal clear.
So
there's 30,000 people in this district, roughly.
30,000 active voters, right?
Yeah.
16thcircuit.org/streetcar has the district map, the ballot application, and the public notice, which also appeared 3 times in the Kansas City Star per statute. And we've also been trying to get the word out through media. There's a campaign called Connect KC that's doing door-to-door voter contact and holding events. And there's also an opposition group that's educating people on how to vote called Smart KC. And they are doing similar outreach.
And people have to get these things postmarked by when?
Postmark is dicey. So the statute requires the ballot application be received by the due date. So if you're planning to mail it this weekend, I would say make sure there's a first-class stamp and that you get it out on Saturday.
It's due by when?
It has to be in the court's hands 5 p.m. May 23rd.
And that's what day is that next
that's
week?
That's Tuesday.
Tuesday. Yeah. Okay. Let's go to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888. Sherry from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. He referred to a technical study that has just been undertaken or just been let out. How much is that going to cost? The study for phase two cost $1.9 million. What's this going to cost?
All I know is that it's a joint effort between the Streetcar Authority and the Kansas City Area Transportation Authority, which, of course, operates the regional transit system, and the Streetcar Authority operates the streetcar on behalf of the city. So you would have to ask them for what that study will cost.
But you're on both. You're on the alliance, and you're on the authority.
Yeah, I'm on the board of directors, so staff is negotiating the final price for that contract.
So it wasn't put out for bids?
No, it was put out for bid, but staff is negotiated the final terms of that contract.
You can
contact the Streetcar Authority, info@kcstreetcar.org.
What portion of the final cost is KCATA going to be paying?
Of the study?
Yes.
You'd have to contact them for that, too. I think their board took action many months ago to authorize that expense.
Sherry, thanks for the call. After folks apply for a ballot, what happens next, David?
Good question. So then the actual voting begins. So this is just an application. So once all the applications are received, the ballots will be printed. This actually saves you from having to print more ballots than you need because we'll know the exact amount of voters. And those will be printed and then mailed on June 20th. And voters receive the ballot in the mail, shortly after that. It's a simple yes-no question. Shall a district be formed? And then a legal description of the district itself. And then they return that. And in accordance with Missouri law, all mail-in ballots must be notarized. So I'm a public notary, so I'd be happy to make a visit to anyone to help get that done. And it's also important
to take that extra step to get the thing notarized.
They do. Voting by mail in Missouri, unfortunately, requires that step. And I wish it were different, but it's not. And so this is what we have to deal with. Now, no one can charge you for notarizing a ballot. That is also Missouri law. So And every bank, almost every office, and of course we'll be holding notary events without regard to how you're voting.
And when are we going to know the results of this election?
So the election board will be counting and certifying the results, also in accordance with the statute, and they will probably have those results within a day or two.
And that would be when, roughly?
August 2nd or 3rd or, you know, shortly after that, yes.
Okay, so if the district is established and people vote to tax themselves, then what happens? If this thing is a yes, where do we go from there?
So all this vote does is form the district as a political subdivision. So no taxes or assessments would be levied at all until the project – well, first of all, we have to have a final election to approve those revenue sources, but the petition states that the project must be substantially funded before those would be enacted. So the absolute next step would be electing a at-large board of directors, which is different than how we did it downtown. And the reason it's different is because the proponents, the people who petitioned the court, were registered voters of Jackson County versus the city and the Port Authority, which was the original proposal. So we'll elect that board. At large from the district, top seven vote-getters take seats. They really have nothing to do except schedule that final election, which will authorize the revenue sources, yes or no on two separate questions, one for the sales tax, one for the special assessment. Mm-hmm. And that would be conducted in early 2018.
Okay. And so we'd have maybe a second election, and then that's it. If they're both yeses, the thing, construction begins.
Maybe 2019. After this, it's really up to the city. The city is the owner and was the builder of the downtown system. So it's going to be completely up to the city and the whatever council is in place when they start to move that process forward.
And the federal money.
And the federal money, right? So as we mentioned, you know, that's always a question mark. But
So two elections total here.
Right.
Okay. We're going to leave our conversation there. That's David Johnson, chairman of the Kansas City Regional Transit Alliance. Thanks for coming in. Thanks for explaining this. This is kind of a tongue twister for a lot of people, but I'm glad you did it.
Yes, as I've said to many people, I wouldn't have designed it this way if I had all my choices, but it is what it is.
Sounds good. Time for a break. When we come back, Kevin Callison will talk about the shrinking vacancy rate downtown and why that's a good thing for Kansas City. I'm Steve Kraske, and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday, we discussed a new proposal to design, build, and privately finance a single terminal airport out at KCI. You can find that conversation at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, where does a government official's obligation to the truth begin and their duty to follow orders end? The ethics professors discuss that and whether United Airlines was right in forcibly dragging a passenger off an overbooked flight. That's tomorrow on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, we all know that downtown Kansas City has transformed itself in recent years, but did you know by how much? KC leads the nation these days in reducing its office vacancy rate. In fact, an astounding total of 1.7 million square feet of former office space has been converted to new uses over the past 3 years. Development reporter Kevin Collison has written about this for KCUR, and he's here right now to say even more about it. And Kevin, welcome back.
Good morning, Steve.
We all know Kansas City's downtown has been revitalized, and this decline in the vacancy rate is yet another measure of that. How important is a measurement like this?
Well, it's important in the sense that for a long time, downtown Kansas City had a very, very high vacancy rate for office space that certainly discouraged the idea of any new construction going on downtown, and also just, you know, was a certainly a negative factor in how people looked at downtown and its vitality and health. So reducing that vacancy rate, and I think we're going to get into it a little deeper as to why it's been reduced, but it still is a symbol of a downtown that's starting to get its mojo back.
And so the rate today is what, the vacancy rate?
The vacancy rate right now is 12.8%, and that's they've had, I guess, about 3 years of steady declines. And in the first quarter of this year, according to CBRE, which is a major real estate firm, Kansas City's decline in its downtown office vacancy rate led the nation.
Wow.
Yeah.
12% still strikes me as a little on the high side. Is it or not?
Well, you know, I think that's it's very comparable to what you see in most markets in town now. I mean, you know, for a long time, you know, the most robust office markets in Kansas City are either the southern Johnson County along I-435 or the Plaza area. And now we're getting to levels that are very similar to those.
To what extent does this suggest, Kevin, that the investments this city has made in its downtown, and there have been considerable investments here, have actually paid off?
Well, it's fascinating in that, Steve, what's going on here is not so much we're seeing downtown becoming a major business magnet the way it was 30, 40, 50 years ago. What's happened is a lot of the older office buildings that were built before the Second World War that had been lagging, they'd either been vacant or they'd been, you know, semi-empty simply because of the flight of businesses outside the downtown area to the suburbs over the past 30 years. What's gone on now is because downtown has become such an attractive place for people to live, a lot of those older buildings, with the help of the Missouri State Historic Tax Credit Program and other programs, have been renovated into apartments. So what we're seeing here is kind of a situation where by subtracting this inventory and converting it to other uses for residential, and some of them have been converted to hotels, you know, we're seeing the vacancy rate going down because there's just not that much product anymore. Although we have seen some major businesses that have come downtown too, and we did get the first new office project since 1991 opened recently at the Corrigan Station project. That's a renovation of an older building at 18th and Walnut, and they've attracted some major tenants. But getting back to your original question, I mean, the fact that downtown is a place that people want to live and play, and, you know, that is certainly a big factor that's helped reduce this. And people are now hoping that with the lower vacancy rate, more people might want to come down there to work.
So that's what makes Kansas City's downtown different today than back in the 50s or 60s. It's no longer just a place where people go to work. It's a place where people go to live, too.
Exactly. We've seen over the past 10, 15 years, almost a metamorphosis of downtown from being the traditional office hub and retail. We saw the department stores disappear in the 70s and 80s. The office departure, the business departure was kind of accompanying all that. But what we're seeing now is much more of what people like to call a mixed use.
I was going to say, that's the term, mixed use.
That's the mantra, mixed use, where you've got people living there, you've got people still working there. There's still a strong, strong office presence. And a lot of public sector jobs are down there, and people coming down there to play with the Sprint Center and the Power and Light District and the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. So downtown it's like the old cliche. It's not your grandfather's downtown. It is now a place where people, and the old cliche is live, work, and play.
And again, this is what Kansas City has sort of been aiming for a very long time now, to revitalize its downtown, its central core. The thinking has long been that a vital downtown is essential to any major American city, even today.
Yes, you're very accurate. And we're very similar to what we're seeing in other places like Minneapolis and Denver, where you've got a much more of a mixed-use approach. It's not the retail capital it was, and it's not really the office capital it was, but it's becoming now a place where, a lot of different uses, and in a way becoming the heart of the metro again.
Why is downtown considered to be a cool place to live? I mean, you don't have yards, you don't have basketball courts, at least maybe not as easily available as they might be otherwise. So what's all that about?
Well, you know, when we, over the years reporting on what's been happening with downtown, you know, it's become a very attractive place for the folks in the millennial generation, young people in their 20s and 30s, early 30s. And
you know, that's not you, and that's not me.
That's not you. Although there are empty nesters, which I'm definitely part of that club.
Yeah.
They're more inspired by urban-oriented type of cultural references like Friends and Seinfeld. You know, you and I hate to date ourselves, grew up with Leave It to Beaver, where the ideal life was out there with the yard and the white
picket
fence.
Yeah,
I know. But and more updated versions of that. But younger people, not everybody. There's still certainly plenty of younger people living in the suburbs, but there is definitely an allure of that urban vibe, you know, living in an apartment, being out there, able to intermingle with other folks at bars and restaurants and public events and concerts, etc., not having to worry about taking care of a yard. And also, you know, there's a lot of information out these days that younger people are deferring wanting to go out and buy that house. Either they can't afford it or they've seen what happened in the crash back in 2008 and see people lose a lot of money on housing as opposed to the American dream that owning a house is the only way you can build wealth. So there's a lot of confluence going on here. And Kansas City was fortunate enough, again, getting back to our office vacancy story, we had a lot of great old buildings that were ready to go for a new life. And as Sean O'Byrne, who is the business guy at the downtown council, told me, you know, what we're seeing here is because of Missouri having a progressive historic tax credit program, which helps developers, you know, get that final chunk they need to get these buildings rehabbed, instead of these buildings being blighted and vacant and ultimately perhaps demolished, they've got another lease on life that the people who occupied them back in the 30s and 40s never would have recognized. Hmm. But they're going to be around for our kids to enjoy.
Well, let me just ask, you and your wife just took a look at the idea of moving downtown. You looked around a number of different areas. What did you make of what was there much available downtown, and what did you make of it?
Well, I'm glad you could brought that up. I mean, it's fascinating. You know, we were looking at condos, and for whatever reason, Kansas City's not a big condo town. There's a lot of apartments, though. What really surprised me,
Why is that? I don't understand. Is there one over the other?
Well, I think Kansas Cityans, it's still possible in this city to get a very nice house in a very nice area for $300,000 or $400,000. For $300,000 or $400,000 for a condo, you essentially get two bedrooms, two baths, a nice kitchen, a nice living room, and a balcony. You know, so if you like to have a little elbow room and you want to have that yard or outdoor space, condos, you know, just maybe don't add up financially. Although I think it's going to change. I think developers are going to start picking up on the fact that a lot of empty nesters want to, you know, downsize, but they rather own than rent. But what also surprised me, again, this is just over the past few years since I was reporting at the Star, is just how much rents have gone up. I mean, it used to be a big deal for a developer to get $1 a square foot for rent, and now we've got some of these rents approaching $2 a square foot, which, you know, we're still not paying Chicago or New York prices, but it's definitely a lot more than it was just a few years ago.
So a two-bedroom downtown is going for...
two-bedroom, two-bath, for a couple of grand at least a month.
A couple of grand a month.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and again, that's significantly more than it was just a few years ago. It'll be really interesting, and I hope to do a story for KCUR on this topic. I mean, there are a tremendous number of new apartment projects coming online. I mean, not just downtown, but all over. We've written a bit about this proposal for Westport for about 200 or 300 units there. Mm-hmm. You go out to the suburbs, there's just tremendous amount of apartment construction. It'll be really interesting to see if we're going to get a glut here.
So are we seeing a shift away from buying homes to apartments and condos, or is that going too far?
Well, I mean, there are definitely trends that are changing that, again, as I pointed out earlier, a lot of younger people are deferring buying that house either because they can't afford it or they don't want that lifestyle, at least as they used to. And, and there are people who, I mean, one of the things that I learned, again, you learn so much when you do this, is that when you sell your house in the suburbs, you can sometimes take that money and just invest it. And the yield alone will provide enough to really defer the cost of what renting is. And then you still have the money available in an investment as opposed to tied up in real estate. So a lot of different ways to look at the residential equation than there was that I think for our parents' generation.
Kevin Colliston's my guest. We're talking about the shrinking vacancy rate in downtown Kansas City. So given the shrinking rate, again, if you want to rent or even own a condo downtown, are there many choices available?
Well, there's real, again, not in condos. There's a lot of apartment choices. But getting back to the office question, what has got some people excited, and one of the guys I talked to for the interview for the KCUR story was that, you know, maybe we'll finally get to the point where there's enough demand downtown and the rents have gone up enough, because this has been accompanied by a bump up in what the rents are that people can get for office space downtown. Maybe we'll see another high rise go up. I mean, it's been the H&R Block building 10 years ago was the last high rise office building to get built in downtown. Mm-hmm. And then you have to look to the early 90s and late 80s to come up with what you would used to call a skyscraper, like 1201 Walnut or One Kansas City Place. So we really haven't had a big tower go up in our downtown for quite a while. But
we're reaching that point.
But we might be. I mean, the gentleman I talked to at CBRE thought maybe within the next year and a half, somebody might announce a major office development. I know Copacan Brooks, which is the developer, co-developer, I should say, of the Corrigan Station building. They've got the property across from the Sprint Center on Grand that they've been trying to market for a high-rise building. So, you know, those things may finally, the stars may align that we might get some new office development downtown as opposed to just doing renovations.
And are you seeing some of that kind of high-rise development in other cities like Minneapolis and Denver right now?
You go to Minneapolis, they've been building some, you know, it's not a huge tear, but they've certainly put up tall buildings over the past 10 years. Denver has certainly added to its skyline over the past 10 years. You know, you go to places like Seattle, and it's just booming like crazy with the investments being made by Amazon and some of the other big businesses there. So, yeah, Kansas City's definitely, I mean, well, Oklahoma City has a taller skyscraper now than Kansas City does, and I think that opened up just a few years ago. So even some of our regional rivals have been building some high-rise structures.
But still, as your article at KCUR.org points out, that the price per square foot to rent is still below national averages, and that's still one metric that might have to change before high-rises come on the scene.
Yeah, well, and Kansas City's always been a relatively inexpensive place, which, again, is a real draw. I mean, one of the firms are actually two of the firms that are coming downtown. One of them's relocating from the L.A. area. I think it's called – I'm going to look at my notes here real quick. But and then it's called Auto Alert. It's a software company. They're moving from California to space in our downtown. And WeWorks has become a major tenant at this Corrigan Station building. And they're based out of New York. And it's kind of a work co-share type business. But again, you know, because we're affordable, we're starting to see people from the coast take a look because rents here are a fraction of what they are in places like San Francisco.
Well, another big issue that affects downtown every day is the Cordish Company and the construction of the Power and Light District. Everyone knows, or a lot of people know, that Kansas City as a city is still subsidizing that development to the tune of several million dollars a year. You begin to wonder, you know, that if this construction boom continues, you know, whether we'll get to a point where that subsidy begins to drop dramatically or go away altogether.
Well, that's definitely the hope. I mean, you know, again, most people are agree that the Power and Light District was a good investment by the city. Everybody knows it hasn't performed financially the way it was originally laid out. But the more people who live downtown and come downtown and patronize those businesses helps to reduce that subsidy that the city's had to provide for that project.
If our listeners have thoughts on the pros and cons of living downtown, we'd like to hear from you. 816-235-2888 or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Eric tweeted us this question, Kevin. Will the decrease in vacancies mean anything for the East Village project? And tell us what the East Village project is.
Well, okay, that's a great question, Eric. I actually bumped into somebody from Van Trust the other day. The East Village is an area on the east side of Isles Davis Park, east of City Hall. It was cleared out about 10 years ago with the hopes that a major redevelopment along the lines of Quality Hill was going to occur there with lots of apartments, mixed use again, and office buildings. It has languished. It's you know, the only project that was built to this point was J.E. Dunn's headquarters. Part of that development does call for office, and I did bump into one of the folks. Van Trust is a major local real estate development firm here. They're doing a lot of stuff in southern Johnson County, and I think they are starting to smell some opportunities. He was a little coy about whether they've got anything that they're going to announce anytime soon, but again, and that would probably be more low-rise. I mean, that they've got enough space there that they could probably build some a couple of like four- or five-story type buildings. But again, bringing people downtown, I mean, that's the only, you know, of all the stuff, great stuff has been happening downtown over the past 10 years. The only really lagging indicator has been private sector jobs coming downtown to take advantage of how much more appealing the environment is down there. So hopefully with the lower vacancies, and with the increased interest in downtown, we might get some more new construction going on.
Mike from Shawnee. Mike, you're on with Kevin Collison. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Just wanted to talk about pros and cons living in a downtown in another city. Pros are it's walkable. You know, there's always something to do, plenty of places to go, local restaurants usually. My con, and the reason I don't live downtown now, is grocery shopping, man. If you're by yourself going grocery shopping, couple trips to the car, parking's usually far away, so it could be difficult.
Well, I got to tell you, you know, with Cosentino's, they've got a very nice grocery store down there, and it's right on the streetcar line. I mean, you know, that's compared to a lot of cities, I think we've got better access to a grocery store if you live downtown than if you do and if you live in downtown Denver or Minneapolis. And again, I keep bringing up Denver and Minneapolis because I'm pretty familiar with those places, and there may be other cities that are far better. But, you know, there is a first-rate grocery store right in the heart of downtown and right on the streetcar line.
Well, I guess, I meant to be clear, is getting the groceries from the grocery store to your apartment.
Oh, yeah.
Or your, you know, carrying them.
It's an issue.
That's true.
Yeah. All right, Mike, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You know, downtown has always had this major strike against it, Kevin, and that's parking. It's more expensive downtown. And I'm wondering, given that impediment, how have we been able to overcome that?
Well, that's a great question. One of the reasons that some of these older office buildings ended up losing tenants, you know, and have now been converted to apartments was because they don't have the parking available that suburban office style projects have. You know, we've seen a lot of garages get built downtown. I know that the folks who support the streetcar just cringe anytime you talk about we need more space for cars. And, you know, but I think, you know, again, compared to other cities of our size, parking is still pretty easy to get and very reasonably priced compared to most other cities that I know of.
Jeff lives downtown. You're on with Kevin Collison, Jeff.
Well, one of the things that people haven't considered when we talk about the increase in rental rates downtown is the fact that a lot of low to moderate income people who were already here are being displaced by the extreme increases in rental rates. And senior citizens and other people of low income, we just cannot afford $2,000 to $3,000 a month for apartment rentals. And all of this has still not gotten us a department store downtown. We had to travel forever a ways from here to find that.
Has your rent gone up, Jeff?
I live in a subsidized, in one of the only two subsidized types of units downtown, so my rent will not go up, but there's a lot of people who live in unsubsidized apartments who are being squeezed out by the tremendous increases in rents.
Jeff, you raise a great point. For a while, the Missouri Housing Development Corporation had a pretty robust affordable housing tax credit program that a lot of developers were also layering with the historic tax credit program to come up with affordable projects like the professional building and I think 10 grand. For whatever reason, even though it was a great success, the state prohibited those programs from being piggybacked on one another. So we've seen a real drop in the number of affordable housing projects that have been done downtown.
That's Kevin Collison. He writes about development occasionally for KCUR.org. And Kevin, great to have you here.
Oh,
thanks for taking
the time.
It's a
lot of fun.
Coming up, Brian McTavish and your weekend to-do list. Who's here? Brian McTavish is here to talk about some cool stuff to do this weekend. How are you?
Who
else would it be?
Okay.
Yeah. So we're listening to the Peppers.
I've got two.
As in Red Hot Chili.
I've got two more or less radio-friendly words when it comes to the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Ready?
Yes.
Listen up. Funk. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Well,
yeah.
They haven't shut us down yet, so
no.
We're in great shape.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which, you know, in my mind, they'll always be those four guys jumping around on stage like pogo sticks,
yeah,
who at the very end of their club show would return sans clothes, shoes, hats. All they had on were the white tube socks strategically placed on their anatomies. This was a wonderful gimmick,
yeah.
This thing. I mean, even in Rolling Stone, I think they got more attention for the tube socks than they did their sort of progressive yet you know, 1960s and 70s loving funk slash punk
right.
music. And they got three original members still leading the charge at the Sprint Center. That's 8 o'clock Sunday, Red Hot Chili Peppers. Let's see, who are the originals? Anthony Kiedis is still singing. Flea, he just goes by Flea now, on bass. And Chad Smith on drums. These guys started out in the early 80s. They were high school pals. They did the L.A. strip clubs. And now they're playing stadiums and concert arenas like the Sprint Center all over the world. In
8 o'clock Sunday night at the Sprint Center.
Hey, their latest hit album was Getaway. But Steve, there is no escaping this groove, okay?
Okay.
You cannot escape it.
Here we go. Let's push ourselves to the max.
No.
Or not.
No.
No.
No, you, not me.
No, not me.
Never me. Sometimes
I got a new
you.
Hip. I'm not pushing myself
hey,
anywhere.
Well, let's. Yeah. How about some breaking news?
Yeah.
Or non-breaking news. How's it going
well,
with the hip?
It's going well. It's 5 months. I'm 5 months or 4 months into it. It's just fine.
Oh, you look bouncy, trouncy, fun.
But I'm not doing this stuff.
Oh, no.
That you're here to talk about.
No,
that,
I don't
those
think...
days are over.
No, no. You had those days?
I never
had those days.
Basketball.
Okay.
Missed basketball.
Hey, like I tell the kids in my substitute teaching classes, you know, did you play basketball? I look at them seriously and I say, I was the king of the driveway. And they look at me kind of funny. They still put goalposts in driveways, don't
yeah,
they?
Whatever.
Don't they? Whatever. Yeah. Well, yeah. You know. Okay, it's the Meshuggah CrossFit Summer Melee. That's right. 300 local male and female athletes take themselves to the limit and then some, if only so guys like us don't have to. 10 in the morning till 7 Saturday, all day Saturday at the Jewish Community Center of Greater Kansas City. And, you know, it's this wildly strenuous CrossFit thing. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, I guess.
People who know what they're doing get injured, okay? People like us get hurt just watching them try so hard. Anyway, they'll give absolutely everything they've got. If somebody goes down, you know, you could jump in for them if you wanted to. You know, just jump right in from the stands. They probably would let you because there's a guy with guts. There's Steve Kraske. No?
That's not happening.
Okay. Well, anyway, they run, they swim, they rope climb, they assault bike, they're acrobats. And boy, some of this weightlifting I saw online from last year, 1,000 people showed up. It's all outside. And we're talking serious muscle time.
Wow.
It's good times.
Be sure to see Brian's 6 physical and metaphysical things to do in Kansas City this weekend at kcur.org.
I'm more into the metaphysical myself.
Yeah. This is quite a change from where we've been. Yeah.
Okay. Let's say you're part physical animal, you're part not physical animal.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's say you want to try a yoga happy triathlon. If you're a new ager, that's great. If you're just curious, you
yoga
could be...
and triathlon don't go together
well,
for me.
Well, they do on the weekend to-do list because from 7:30 in the morning till 3:30 in the afternoon on Saturday at Berkeley Riverfront Park, there is Wanderlust 108. And it's this, it's basically three things. It's a 5K walk or run. You warm up. There's a music-fueled yoga class to get hot. And then there's a guided meditation to cool down and clear the mind of such thoughts as, ow! Because yoga's hard. That's a whole lot of stretching going on. And I wish them well. I wish them well. It's only $20 or $30 to participate, and lunch is called the Wander Bowl. I don't know what's in it. We took a song and we made it sing, and we're right in tune. Yes, it's true, we're right in tune. Oh, yeah.
What do we have here?
Well, listen up. Now, do you hear a little bit of Jerry Garcia and the Grateful Dead
there?
Yeah,
maybe a little bit.
Maybe a little bit. That's an oft-made comparison. I think it's more or less accurate. That's a band called Railroad Earth. They're the headliner on Saturday. The Friday night headliner at the Bluegrass in the Bottoms Music Festival is Green Sky Bluegrass. It starts at 5:30 Friday night. It starts at Saturday night. 2 days. at Knucklehead Saloon, which I guess technically is in the Bottoms, but on the other end of the downtown, I suppose. Other bands on display include the Naughty Pines, Horseshoes and Hand Grenades, the Yonder Mountain String Band, and my favorite, just because I like the name, Whiskey for the Lady. But between you and me, give me some Flattened Scruggs.
Okay.
That's what I'm up for. What, it's bluegrass out the you-know-what all weekend at Knuckleheads.
And finally today... You can do magic. You can have anything that you desire. Magic. And you know... Let's talk magic here a little bit. What do we got?
Well, is there anything, Steve?
More magic.
More magic.
Always have.
Oh, you're going to love this then.
Yeah.
You're going to love this then. It's the Naked Magician, Steve. Mm. Poof. No more clothes.
Naked Magicians.
Poof. No more clothes. Okay, there's some dirty joke which we can't tell and I can't think of correctly that involves Down Under. But they're from Australia, okay? And they give R-rated magic to the ladies, primarily, I assume. 8 o'clock. Can I get another huh?
Yeah.
Oh, that look on your face.
Say, yeah,
We could go.
Yeah.
We could be like on the other side of the seesaw balancing it out from the male perspective.
Okay.
8 o'clock. There was an okay. You threw me a curve there. 8 o'clock, Saturday night. Uptown Theater, it's the Naked Magicians. Have you ever performed a magic trick in the buff?
No.
In front of the mirror?
No.
I guess we should end it there.
Yes. Hey, just quickly, on a more serious note.
Much more serious.
I wanted to give you condolences for the loss of your buddy, Jim Cavanaugh, the comic book store owner who was tragically killed a week ago now.
Yeah, he went out back of his store in Midtown, the legendary Midtown location, Clint's Comics. Jim Cavanaugh, great friend for many, many years. I moved here, and anyway, he passed away after confronting a comic book thief, of all things.
And this has changed the comic book culture in town,
but,
right?
Well, yeah, man, because, you know, he was the granddaddy. He was the godfather of the comic book scene. There's lots of comic book specialty shops in Kansas City, but the first one and one of the oldest in America is Clint's Comics. So if you knew Jim, celebrate his life if you're somebody who loves the comics.
I'm Steve Kraske, and we'll see you tomorrow.